My name is Gary Butterfield.
My name is Cole Ross.
And you're listening to Best Quality Vacuum Season 4 Wrap-Up. Talking about Season 4 Breaking Bad.
Yeah, faces off, responses in.
Yeah, response on is the subtitle for this. We are talking about the special features on the DVD, Blu-ray of Season 4 of Breaking Bad and reading your thoughts on it before we get into Season 5, which is not the final season.
No.
Weirdly enough.
Yeah, we're good. We're going to go back several years. Yeah, it's good. Kind of wild that we're already so far in. Feels like we kind of just 50. Started the show. Yeah.
Very much feels like we just started it, but that's 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
Ludicrous.
Yeah. And then we're gonna read your responses after we talk about those DVDs, the DVD features, which are plentiful.
Plentiful and decent.
Yep.
You know, comparing them, this is some of our worst deleted scenes.
Yes.
That we've had. Some of these are okay, but some of them are very rough and then nothing happens.
Mm-hmm.
So we're gonna go through those real quick. There's one for Box Cutter.
Mm-hmm.
That is just different angles of Victor being killed without as much special effects going to it. Didn't need that.
Nope. Didn't need to, see the take where Giancarlo like lifted him up more and pushed him more directly.
Yeah. Yeah. Very subtle shit.
Yeah. A lot of these are just extended scenes, right?
Yeah.
Or just like extra footage of stuff. So like the open house, it is just the extended scene from open house is just alternate cut with no music, without that banger of a Fever Ray track of Jesse go-karting, but it still has the screams in her cut.
It's like he go-karted. Let's make sure we show it.
Yeah.
You know, there's some of these also that are just things being moved around.
Mm-hmm.
So for Shotgun, we have Mike letting Jesse smoke in his car after the stage robbery. That happens in the episode. It just happens later.
Mm-hmm.
It happens. He picks him up from a different spot.
Yeah.
In the episode, he picks him up from the Mexican restaurant. Here, he picks him up in the alley. Mm-hmm. But they have the same exchange.
Yes.
I understand the impetus to put this in because they did shoot it.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that the kind of cumulative effect of watching these is seeing how much of a perfectionist Gilligan and company are.
Yes.
In terms of this, like they'll have things that are very subtle changes that I cannot imagine making too much of a difference, but somebody thought, oh, this would be better if this were here.
Yeah. Yeah. We get a little bit of characterization from Hank in Shotgun. Just Hank, riveting footage of Hank watching/listening to a documentary about igneous rock. There's nothing on the screen because that would have been added in post. And then becoming so bored that he calls Tim, the homicide detective, to start talking about his hunch. It's him kind of losing the minerals fascination.
Yeah. And that's all. What's interesting, because that is characterization, but it's characterization that was implied mm-hmm. with the way they actually cut the episode.
Yeah.
You know, like we know that happened. They just didn't show it.
Mm-hmm.
It's interesting how a lot of these scenes are just, and again, this is me saying, did I just discover what a deleted scene is? are just editing things. Like they just help the flow. Sometimes mm-hmm. they still have information in them. Sometimes there's something like this that they realize they could imply rather than show.
Yeah. So it's not like, I'm getting new information. I'm actually like, this makes me just appreciate the stuff that they cut out and just let you figure out on your own.
Yeah.
It's like, they probably wrote this and then saw we can add by subtracting. And no, that's definitely what happened. Yeah.
Yeah. In Cornered, we get an extended version of Bogdan dressing down Walt after he buys the car wash.
Mm-hmm.
Here. We didn't need this. I like Bogdan, but like what we had was good.
Yep.
Yeah. Little comedy scene here, which is good, where we, in Problem Dog, where Skyler is having Walt at the cashier counter, has him pay for his car wash, and then does a bunch of fake transactions
mm-hmm.
in front of him as she's been doing.
Yeah.
Walt says, what is all this play acting about? And, she explains what she does to launder mm-hmm. the money.
Mm-hmm.
And then she says, and he goes, well, actually, I meant why you're talking out loud. there's actually a button for this that also got deleted,
mm-hmm.
Which is amazing. Like she realizes it and stops too.
Yep.
it's funny.
Yeah.
But we could have assumed she'd stop doing that.
Yeah. It just the scene in the episode, or it might be one later than this, is just her doing this. You can tell she's falsifying the transactions because we had the pigs and bunnies explanation of money laundering from Saul last season.
Yeah. She's now explaining it to Walt. Like, you can see why they cut it. I love that, she stops doing this, you know, but her Walt criticizing her for doing it and her stopping, mm-hmm. I'd be lying if I said I ever wondered if she stopped doing it.
Yeah.
Like, this dangling thread, you know, people tuning in week to week to see if Skylar ever stops talking out loud while doing false drops.
Uh-huh.
You know, I don't care.
Nah, not
I couldn't
really.
Care even a little bit.
Hermanos, we get an extended version of Jesse pumping Saul for info after he drops the check off at Andrea's, you know?
The extended version is he goes after he leaves. That's when it cuts in the first episode.
Yeah.
He goes up to Andrea's.
Yes.
The way it's played in episode, it's unclear whether he's just leaving. Uh-huh. Like, he doesn't really respond to Saul. Here he's actually going up and talking to her.
Yes.
It looks like. But I don't think they did that. I think they shot, you know, he doesn't go talk to her there.
Mm-hmm.
He talks to her later.
Yeah.
One of them I like is in Bug. This longer version where Ted comes in to talk to Skylar while she's falsifying transactions.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a little bit more Ted being in trouble. You know,
it's more Ted, but also it is, like, to me, way more stressful in this kind of naturalistic way, because it goes on for longer. She is, you know, goes from falsifying the stuff to actually having a line build up.
Yeah.
Having employees like kind of waiting off to the side, ready to like ask her a question. And then here's Ted, you know, just trying to like, you know, throw in like it feels stressful on her behalf.
It's very stressful. He can barely, he's trying to make small talk to get in on this very difficult conversation he wants to have. Yeah. I like that stress. I think that's interesting here.
Yeah. An actual deleted scene, and I like this. This is mm-hmm. comedy to me. It's Walt Jr.'s birthday party from Salute. Marie got Walt Jr. For his 16th birthday a car vacuum.
Jesus Christ, Marie. These folks own a car wash.
And she's like, well, you know, but I wanted to talk to you. Like, I just, your vacuumers, which is like, I love Marie as a character.
That's a very Marie thing.
As a person, I would challenge her to a joust.
Yeah. Yeah.
Horses she's and lances co-worker. And Dawn.
She's very coworker coded. Like, the kind of person who means well, but oh. Hank got him a membership to the APD Benevolent Association. So mm-hmm. like, hey, hand this over with your license. I'll get you out tickets. Skylar goes, mm-hmm. He goes, yeah, but drive safe. Don't use it. But he's very proud of himself for coming up with a cool gift.
Yes.
I find that very funny.
Mm-hmm.
And Skylar got him $50 for the gas.
Yeah.
Yeah. A fine gift on top of a car.
It's something you're going to use. You're never not going to use gas. So funny that this is just the rite of passage when you turn 16. I had this exact same kind of birthday party where it was just like, here's a little CD holder. Here's
car stuff.
Yeah. Here, just all of your car stuff. Here's an emergency kit.
Yeah,
I'm really happy that I got it, but it's just funny that like you get this themed. It's like the one themed birthday party that everybody has in common.
Yeah. Except for me.
Well, yeah, you know.
Salute. We get. I like this scene as well. This is mm-hmm. a reasonable extended scene. It is of Saul giving Ted the money, and here's where you get to see the wheel spinning for Ted.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a little bit. Saul, you know, Ted remarks on the timing, like, oh, I actually owe an amount of money similar to that. And Saul says, oh, you know how everything's in the cloud. You know, the IRS pinged you and that caused a ping in Luxembourg,
mm-hmm.
you know. And Ted is very surprised that he can get the check today. And you get to see him going,
Yeah.
You know, thinking about that, which I like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love this, you know, 2013 and just, a wizard did it. You know how the cloud works.
Yeah. There was a movie about that.
Uh-huh.
Do you remember the horror comedy, The Cloud?
No, I don't remember that. I thought you were talking about like Singularity or whatever.
No. It was a goofy, you know, Jed Apatow kind of thing, but the trailer made it look a little bit like a horror movie about your information getting into the cloud.
Huh.
Like it's one of the most dated things I've ever seen in my life. That movie has been memory holed. That's coming to Tubi. So keep an eye out. That's going to be on Tubi. Check it out. We're on Daily Motion.
And the final one we get is from Crawlspace, drawing some direct lines between Jesse and what Gus is doing at the retirement home. You know, it's Jesse and Gus leaving the nursing home, and Jesse is like, what the hell was that? And Gus says, well, you know, he murdered somebody very close to me. And then the nurse asks if she'll see Gus, if Gus will be back next week. This, I'm glad that they cut this a little bit, because it's a little bit just like, oh yeah, no, here's everything you need in order to put people at the scene where things happen.
Yeah. Well, I think they cut it because they changed their minds.
Yeah.
That when the nurse is like, we'll see you next week, and he goes, yes, I was like, okay. Maybe at one point the plan was for Jesse to tell Walt when Gus would be there.
Yeah.
Specifically, not just that Gus goes there generally, you know, and have it be a more direct face slash off.
Mm-hmm.
But instead they cut this and had Jesse not really know the schedule. So then Walt would go talk to Tio.
Yeah.
And ally with him and kind of do a more complicated plan. That's what it felt like a little bit to me.
Mm-hmm.
I like the version we got more as well.
The Hail Mary pass version of it, right?
Yeah, much better.
Yeah.
Then the most worthless special feature on all of these is Inside Breaking Bad.
Mm-hmm.
These are little packages that show actors and directors talking about a scene in an episode that you've just watched. talking about like character motivations and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
There's nothing here.
Yeah.
I hate these.
Yeah. It's just Giancarlo Esposito. It's fun to see him talk out of character, you know?
Yeah.
Because he's just a treasure. Just a really bright guy, you know?
Yeah.
But just saying like, oh yeah, you know, this is Gus showing that he doesn't just have other people do his dirty work. He's going to do it himself and kind of shifting the tone for the season. It's like, yeah, that is a very good summary of what that scene in Boxcutter does.
It is a little bit like a teacher asking kids what the scene was doing,
mm-hmm.
you know, and it's not the people, the actors saying it. It's not their fault. This is for people who have no media comprehension whatsoever. It feels like,
right. Yeah.
Real quick, just because I want to complain about it. I yearn for the days that all special features were on one disc.
Oh my God, Gary.
Yeah. Switching the disc on this made me feel like a caveman.
Uh-huh.
And I understand that's just, you know, that's wild. Cause that's why you should do all the time,
mm-hmm.
you know, as recently as 10 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it made me feel like, oh no, this special feature is actually on this disc, but this special feature is on this disc.
It's
fucking leprechaun games that your PS5 makes you do.
Well, I mean, also just on top of it, like this is like Blu-ray menus specifically being the worst, which is you put in disc one and it shows you all of the special features, but you have no way of knowing what is on what disc without looking at the box.
It's on the box. It's on the disc.
Yeah.
You'd have to take out the disc to get the guide, which is the thing that you're looking at inside the player.
Yeah. So just like, oh, you know, please insert disc two. And it's like, you could have just not shown this as being mm-hmm. available to me now. UX on Blu-rays, not good.
Really bad.
But also just having streaming with none of these features, not good.
And again, it misunderstands how people watch this shit, because you're not going to watch one disc of the show
mm-hmm.
and then watch all the special features for that disc. You're going to move on to the next episode because that's how TV works. And then at the end, you're going to watch them all.
Yeah.
I don't think that we're alone in how that's how you do it. Like I really want just the special features on one disc.
Yeah.
But then if they made that, I would just buy that.
Yeah.
So I wish they'd package it that way.
Mm-hmm.
Moving on to good things though, we do get the complete karaoke video of Gail singing Major Tom
mm-hmm.
by Tom Schilling or Peter Schilling.
Yeah. This is so good. Like what we get in the episode is plenty to establish how dorky Gail is, you know, it's like, mm-hmm. here's this super eccentric guy, you know, singing Peter Schilling in Thailand, but like seeing the full performance and the way that he like dramatizes it,
you know,
getting like just, you know, really serious and doing the countdown and then doing like a fun little like white guy arm swinging dance. kind of thing, like a Koopa Troopa.
Yes. And then like there's video effects and uh-huh. then you remember he just did this for himself.
Yep.
You know, it's really good. I love that they put this on here. This is really cute.
Yeah.
Probably the best of these mm-hmm. is inside the explosive finale,
mm-hmm.
Which is a little 20-minute mini documentary about Face Off.
Yes.
About how they did that effect. I found this very cool and insightful. Mm-hmm. A lot to this.
Yeah. Like, you know, obviously the process started months before the day, but like this goes through the day. You know, kind of like not minute by minute, but it's like, okay, here's, you know, 9:30 and Giancarlo arrives on set and just kind of walks through the process of getting everything there. And also showing just like how much of what we have, how much of what we get is prosthetic and how much is, you know, CG, and also what mm-hmm. that CG is derived from, right? Like,
yeah.
So we get to see, you know, what must be one of the most terrifying things, which is Giancarlo Esposito getting his head encased to make the cast.
Those things. Yeah. yeah. He seemed pretty chill about it later yeah. in this thing. You know, they show it and, Bryan Cranston shows up. He's like, I've done that before. It's really hard. And they're like, yeah, they kind of talk about, mm-hmm. you know, the process
yeah.
for going through that. Really cool. You know, little production details. They shot this in an actual abandoned nursing home. Mm-hmm. The way they blew the doors, you know, yeah. how dangerous that was with these nitrogen mortars. It's really yeah. cool. And then just how long this whole thing took to do.
Yes.
4.5 hours of makeup. Mm-hmm. Sitting still and having your face covered with crap. I love Mark Margolis showing up uh-huh. and joking around with him. He says, you look like one of those health class things where you take the piece of cellophane uh-huh. and lift it to see what's under skin.
Yeah.
You know, and he's just talking like a guy. I didn't realize that guy just talked like a guy.
Yeah.
yeah.
like his Hector voice, his monster voice. No, not like that's not, no. There's really not any of that in there when he's just kind of goofing around. It's amazing.
Mark Margolis, I wonder if he talks like an ordinary guy. I've seen the special feature and he does. Well, this he is does. My fact checking feature.
Yeah.
It lets me know.
No, but I mean, just like getting to see those three guys just kind of goofing around, you know, I'm not made of stone. It's fun to see
Bryan
the stars
Cranston's
are just
a goddamn
like
treasure.
Yeah.
He's really funny in the bloopers. We're going to get to that.
Yeah.
like we knew that from before, but like, I think the guy seems great.
Uh-huh. Going back just a little bit, it was very fun watching the stunt coordinator kind of explain what he hoped the nitrogen mortars would do when they blew the door off. And I was like, all right, our intention is it's going to, you know, blow flat out and it's going to hit this shelf. It's probably not going to knock this shelf over. We need these tiles to fall. And then to see the actual thing happen and like only half of it went the way that he expected.
Yeah. 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 It's, yeah. it's really neat because it's chaos.
Yeah.
You know, it still looks so great. It also is a real perfectionism thing with Vince Gilligan, who did 19 shots of doing the little pan mm-hmm. to show before Gus fell. And he's like, you know, the straightening of the tie has to be perfect. Him dropping has to be perfect and everything. And then like cute little thing where he didn't want them to tell him which take they used. Mm-hmm. 19 takes is very unusual for television.
Yes.
You know, and it did turn out they used the 19th
yeah.
one. So, mm-hmm. Pretty neat, you know, yeah. again, probably, and this one is actually on YouTube. I was to avoid switching DVDs. I was trying to see if the special features are on YouTube cause I'm lazy. Oh, yeah. This one is. Mm-hmm. So I recommend people who don't have these DVDs watch this cause it's real cool.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. And I hope that Giancarlo got to keep the bust they made.
The bust?
Yeah.
Yeah.
If not him, then me. Gory. Yeah. If not, yeah.
Yeah. yeah.
Those are the two satisfactory yeah. conditions.
Yeah. There's a thing about the sets of Breaking Bad. Mm-hmm. They show recreating Jesse's house. They do a walkthrough of the White House. I love this set dresser mm-hmm. who is very amused by having a door to nowhere and then brings it up later
uh-huh.
as well. We get to see this a lot.
Yeah. Yeah. I like getting a close look at Junior's room. It's like one of the rooms that we just don't get to see in this.
No.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's cool to see. And then Saul's office and the super lab. Mm-hmm. Talking about making all the equipment in the super lab. That's really cool. We're going to get more of that later.
Yes.
As well.
Yeah.
One of the funniest ones is this bit about shotgun. They had a stunt driver do the backwards driving for Jesse when Jesse's in the passenger seat. The way they did this is they had him in a costume as a car seat. It's really funny.
Yeah.
his little eyes are peeking out. Yeah. It's real cute. It's that man who's a chair, Jujito. Yep. Adaptation.
Exactly. Yeah. No, it's just, it's fucking caper.
it's really funny. Very, very funny.
Oh, man. Yeah. We get a feature called The Real Family of Breaking Bad, which is like the camcorder being passed around at a wedding, basically.
It's exactly that. Like yeah. saying names, mm-hmm. you know, of people on the cast and crew. They all seem like they're having fun.
Yeah. yeah.
You know, I will admit that even though this was designed to make me care about the crew, I was just excited when like Jonathan Banks was there and yeah. not talking like Jonathan Banks. Mm-hmm. You know, I care about him more than like Best Boy Grips and shit.
Yeah, yeah.
It's just the case.
Mm-hmm. So. We get some Better Call Saul commercials, including a pretty pretty regretful. Regrettable.
They're not in the show either.
Yeah.
As far as I know, unless they're in the background, they just made these two of them. And they're lower production values because I think that they got cut, basically.
Yeah, yeah.
One is about fat people suing fast food restaurants. You know, I do like that. I'm glad you called out this joke. Mm-hmm. They talk about, you know, with their dollar menus and all these things and their colorful banners, and they show the Mexican flag. I love that colorful banner.
Colorful banners. Mexican flag.
Yeah. That reminds me of like the Tim and Eric sports thing where they're like showing hockey and they're like iced canes, you know, buddy board, flying disc, you know.
And then also a funny gag, you know, just like a before and after, like it's a weight loss commercial, but it's this, it's, you know, just the same guy, still big, but in the before he doesn't have anything. In the second one, he has a big hamburger bag of money.
Yeah. Cute. Yeah. And then there's one about, courting UFC wrestlers, yeah, which is really strange. I didn't know if these were actual UFC guys and that was kind of the joke.
Right.
These two actors they have in it. But the idea is that if you do UFC, you can sue.
Yes.
For things.
Did the barbed wire of your last cage map leave you with the heartbreak of hepatitis?
Yeah, that's funny. That's cute. Yeah. You know, but it also feels like it's trying to be funny too much on purpose. Like, oh, I was knocked out. So, and I could have like choked out three guys in that time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I wouldn't feel like the commercial for this would draw attention to the barbarity of the sport.
Yeah.
They're a video podcast. This is, again, it's a video version of their podcast. They mm-hmm. no longer look like they're all going to break their back.
Yeah.
Which is good.
they finally got around a conference room table instead of having Kelly Dixon like crane her neck around to talk to people at the couch. Yeah.
Yep. There's a gag reel. These are also all on YouTube and they're always great.
Mm-hmm.
To me, my favorite ones are the ones that, have the characters having knowledge they don't have.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so the first one you have noted here that, you know, Walt putting his dollar in the vending machine and not taking it, going, Bogdan. there's also where Mike goes, you know, you're never going to see him again, Walter. And going, that's what you think. I'm going to buy a gun and I'm going to go to his house. You hear me? And, you know, Mike comes back and says, yeah, I hear you. Stuff like that makes me laugh. I characters doing that kind of shit. It's basically what happens in the Breaking Bad, but no one's careful, you know, except they're not, it's happening as a gag as opposed to, you know, an edit.
It's just them trying to make each other laugh. I love it.
Yeah. It's very funny.
And then you get stuff that like took like a lot of preparation, like Cranston just walking out of the bathroom to talk to Skyler. He's dressed as a baby.
Yeah, he's wearing a diaper and a bonnet.
Yeah, I know it was my fantasy, but I hope you got some enjoyment.
She goes, you're a good baby. He's like, actually, I'm a bad baby.
Yeah.
Cranston constantly trying to make the rest of the crew laugh makes me really like him.
Yes.
You know, just it makes him seem like a very fun guy to work with and very likable.
Yeah.
And they're usually genuinely really funny.
Uh-huh, so. Yeah.
Yeah,
the idea of Walter White, ABDL, is very funny to me.
Yeah, so good. They could have done the whole show about that. Can you imagine if Mr. Chips turned into a baby? That was actually the genesis for the show. Like, you think it's if Mr. Chips turned into Scarface, but actually it's a baby.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cast chemistry, this is a little featurette about the relationship between Walt and Jesse, and then also Aaron and Brian. This is sweet.
Yep.
Not telling us anything we don't know.
Yep.
But I like Aaron Paul saying that Brian Cranston's a mentor to him. Mm-hmm. And they both seem to have similar reads on their relationship that I do.
Yep.
You know, which is that there is a very deep affection there for a long portion of their relationship.
Yes.
Yeah.
There's a feature called Color Me Bad where they actually get a costume designer talking about the choices that they have made in the kind of color coding the characters and what those changes mean as they go along. It's funny because, you know, people, there are like common reads on the internet for like, you know, like, oh, here's what this color means. Here's what that. And it's like, oh, when somebody starts dressing in green, it means that they like are more alive. Right.
Yes.
You know, Skylar starts dressing in green when she gets, you know, kind of more into the game. Right.
Yeah. When she starts banging Ted.
Well, yeah.
You know, specifically like when she starts coming. But yeah, like that kind of thing. That's, you know, it's interesting to know.
Yeah.
This kind of stuff. There's a bit about Saul where they, you know, somebody with a lot of money and no taste, mm-hmm. and how a lot of his things look forward looking in terms of European fashion, mm-hmm. you know, like tacky for now, but this might actually be like next year's thing in Europe.
Yeah.
On accident, which is kind of cool.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You know, I noticed also they didn't mention Marie here. I think it's 'cause she doesn't change.
That's right. Yeah.
Yeah, she's always purple.
Yeah, I would just like, I guess I was hoping for some kind of internal acknowledgement of what the color purple means, other than it just being an arbitrary aesthetic choice that they decided to lean in on, right?
Right, just a costume.
Yes. Yeah. Also very funny, Vince is giving his interview for this, you know, doing his talking head in front of a bookshelf. I always like reading what's on people's bookshelves behind them. One of the books is just called Money Laundering.
I saw that. He's also got a tiny model of Tortuga's head.
Uh-huh.
You know, on a turtle, which is great.
Yeah.
I was very surprised by that. I like that. Mm-hmm. The science of a hit show is just very general, like 101 stuff about Walter White.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this is the study of change, all stuff that could have been in the season one.
Yeah.
Special features, basically.
Yeah.
All things we know.
Yeah. We get a tour of the super lab, a little bit more in depth than we got in the previous, you know, the sets of the show, from Michael Flowers, the set decorator. This was interesting just to find out like how they sourced the stuff. Like a lot of the equipment is from a toothpaste factory that shut down.
Mm-hmm.
Also like just, you know, surplus from lab suppliers in New Mexico, because New Mexico is a place where chemical research is done, right?
Yes. Yeah. And he keeps kind of going around, you know, we're threading this needle. We can't actually make meth here. We don't know how to make meth. The DA's here, but this could work.
Mm-hmm.
Like this could work. It could totally work. Like you could make meth here.
Yes.
We don't know how, but you could do it.
Mm-hmm.
He gets kind of squirrely about that. I feel like that was ad-libbed.
Yeah.
And then we get the guy from the previous set thing talking about the Walter White House, again showing off the Door to Nowhere with absolute delight.
Yeah, yeah. This is the first thing I take people to see.
Kids, specifically. He's like, kids really get a kick out of this. And like, he's brought it up multiple times on these DVD special features. It's really funny.
Uh-huh.
Like, not that I don't think it's cool. Like, yeah, sure, set's cool. Uh-huh. But like, it's very funny that he's just like, kids will fucking love that this just goes to another part of the warehouse.
Yeah, yeah.
Kids love when you open a door and it shows a warehouse where they're not supposed to be.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
It's like, you know what? Fucking got me. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, Wiley, fucking Roadrunner shit. You know? Stuart Lyons, you fooled me.
Yeah. Also, a lot is made about the fact that the plumbing fixtures don't go anywhere, that all of them drain into buckets.
Yeah. Yeah. He loves to say bucket.
Bucket.
I find this special feature very quaint
mm-hmm.
With this guy.
Yeah.
All in all, like a pretty mediocre set of special features, but worth it for the Gus documentary, I think.
Yes. You know, and for those moments of getting to see the actors just kind of relate to each other as coworkers who enjoy each other.
You know? It's sweet.
Yeah.
Moving on to your responses for season four, I'll get us started here with Mr. Moneybanks. If you don't cover how vitally important it is that the number 8 can be seen 4 separate times in Salude, I'll foreclose on both of your houses.
And well, Mr. Moneybanks' name out? Makes me think that they can do this.
Yeah, shit.
Fuck.
I didn't comment on that. I don't notice things like that.
Yeah.
In a general sense.
I don't even know going backward, you know, okay, number 8 4 times. Does it have something to do with infinity? Yeah, I don't know.
Is it episode 8 of the season?
Maybe.
They like to do that kind of bullshit.
They do.
I hate stuff like that in production design is the reason why I don't comment on it. That stuff drives me nuts. Like, oh, the license plate is actually the second that this happened. Who gives a fuck?
Yeah.
Like that stuff makes me so mad. It's just for IMDb people to jerk off to, not to call you out.
What the 8 means could be anything. Did anyone else notice the 8 theme in this episode? Like so I see this. There's an 8 in a cloud. The bruise on Jesse's face looks like an 8. And then these other ones are pretty tenuous. It is Jesse standing next to the prop plane. Like the number 8 is next to his head. And then Skyler standing in front of the house, blocking out everything in the address plate, except for the 8. There. So I don't know, man.
Infinity wouldn't make any sense. Even if 8 is an infinity, it doesn't make sense with the episode.
I think that it's the ghost of Crazy 8.
I was going to say it was one of the sane 8s. They're back. I don't, this stuff drives me nuts. The only time I accept this as trivia is if it happens in Japanese media because of the number four. And I'm like, okay, I understand that happens enough to where it's like, can be useful. But this just feels like production event designers being cute.
Yes.
To me.
Yeah. Chief Volpe writes, when I first watched Breaking Bad as a teenager, I thought the attention paid to color in the wardrobe was impressive. E.g. Walter wears tan and green because he's boring. Skyler wears blue. Marie is purple. I especially liked when they changed up character colors to match the mood of the season. Like in season 3, after Skyler confronts Walt about being a drug dealer, she starts wearing green and he starts wearing blue. But as an adult, I think it's twee. I roll my eyes when I get to season 4 and see Walter wearing nothing but red and black.
Yeah, I'm basically with you in this. I also don't like this kind of thing. It reminds me of the production design stuff. Mm-hmm. It's cute that people take pay attention to it, but I am always going to be here more for character-based things than symbolism-based.
Yeah.
The things that, you know, Saul wears tell you a lot about his character.
Mm-hmm.
And I love that. But the idea that, like, oh, he wears yellow, this signifies his happiness at this moment, that is irritating to me. That does feel twee. And honestly, high school, like, it feels very doing a high school essay on Great Expectations.
Once you find out it is intentional, it suddenly becomes much less impressive. You know, the stuff you're talking about, like, okay, well, here's Saul. Like, I want to learn about like the person's taste or station in life by the way that they dress. So like,
yes,
the color stuff around Jesse, I don't care, but like Jesse going from wearing,
I was just about to say,
you know, going from, you know, dressing like a street kid to, you know, kind of being a little bit more buttoned up after he gets out of rehab. That shows a shift in the character. Yes.
Yeah. The color stuff just feels like wanking to me.
Yes.
A cool example of the alternative of that, like the character based one, you do not need to hand it to Michael Richards, but I just found out, I was watching a thing about Seinfeld and he did all of his wardrobe for Kramer, just by cruising around places he thought Kramer would shop. And I was like, that's really cool. That's, you know, I like that a lot. And like, that guy has a lot of personality that comes through in how he dresses, you know? So they're good versions of it as well, but I'm basically with you. I think that is a thing for teens. Eric says, one of my favorite little things from season 4 is Walt and Hank almost bonding over rocks/minerals. It never quite happens. It always feels like Walt's high degree of education puts a chilling effect on Hank's amateur enjoyment. I almost wish that Hank and Walt had some more time to actually bond over something that could have brought them together. Not a great source of drama or something that would move the plot forward, but it just feels like it'd be nice to see. Do you guys have any nice interactions you wish would happen more between the characters or anything along those lines that probably wouldn't be for great TV?
I think that's a pretty good one.
I was just going to plus one. Yeah.
Yeah. I think that when the RV goes away, we lose a lot of, you know, Walt and Jesse bonding, you know, because they have time alone out in a desert. Right.
Yeah. Yeah. And just with, you know, having a corporate job and being under supervision the whole time.
Yeah.
Yeah. I love, whenever they do something, you know, I talked about this, wanting them to go go-karting.
Yeah.
You know, I want all the characters to have external or internal lives and lives with each other and stuff. I get why we don't get to see it, but I think that would be nice.
It kills me seeing them in that arcade, seeing them in Danny's arcade and not playing any of those games. It's Saul. It's Saul who goes looking for Tetris, right?
Yeah. And Saul's Saul, the most relatable member of this entire show in both shows.
Yeah.
Robinson says, season 4 might be my least favorite from Breaking Bad. It's still great television, but at the time watching it, I wasn't as invested in the cartel threads and felt some of the Walter Jesse stuff was meandering. However, I'm listening to this podcast having watched the entirety of Better Call Saul, a show that adds a lot of context to the cartel stuff. So hearing about the machinations of the cartel had new context and was richer for it. I think I still would have preferred the story of Breaking Bad to stick to local Albuquerque crime, but this podcast has given me the insight into the parallels between Walt and Gus's individual motivations.
Oh, I'm happy we can provide that service.
Yeah, happy to help.
I don't know. We're both on record as like in the cartel stuff and Better Call Saul.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah. I also, it's rare that I've heard people say that this is the weakest season of the show. I think that, I don't know if I agree with this, but I think popular consensus is usually this is the strongest.
Yeah.
I could be wrong about that, but I hear people talk about the season a lot.
Yeah.
Or at least moments from the season as being the most like iconic, impactful shit.
Right. When it comes to worst, I hear people always say one or two. Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Matthew writes, Breaking Bad Season 4 is a really strange beast to get into. I liked it much more when I was younger. Its ending is especially epic if you're just a little less savvy to what a wormy little turd Walt really is. But Breaking Bad sometimes suffers from the same issues as Fight Club and Taxi Driver. Since it's about male insecurity, the punchline is liable to pass as a hormonal teenage boy completely by. But season four is when the full mythic scope of the extended Albuquerqueverse,
like Albuquerqueverse,
yeah. Is brought into focus for Better Call Saul. It's the season with four of the most exciting episodes of television ever put in a row, starting with Salud. Then again, it's also the season with Problem Dog and the rage scene, and with Cornered, where Skyler takes us to the Four Corners Monument to single-handedly justify Breaking Bad's New Mexico tax incentives, and where Jesse tricks a meth addict into digging a hole like he's a freaking leprechaun. Like me, when I first watched it, the show was having some growing pains. But boy, do I like what it finally grew into. And man, Crawl Space, what a perfect little poem of editing and sound design.
I think Jesse tricking the meth addict into digging is a great bit.
I will defend that as fucking necessary. I love it so much.
Right. Yeah.
What are you digging for? You know.
Yeah. You know. You know. I love the contempt in his voice. You know, I don't know, but it goes pretty deep. You know, it does have the rage scene. It does have the Four Corners scene. Those are very silly. Mm-hmm. The Four Corners scene gets a little bit of resonance for me when I parallel it with the Walt spin the bottle scene.
Yeah.
Like neither White can trust themselves to, you know, they're like, okay, I'm just going to let luck take it. But like, no, they have things they want.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they just have to be convinced.
Yes.
You know, and then fate trying to, you know, if there is a fate, them flipping and getting the wrong thing or spinning the wrong thing over and over. I like that a lot.
Yes.
But yeah, it does. I think that if people do find the season really strong, it is because of the last four episodes, which are like the best action suspense movie that's ever been.
Mm-hmm.
Oh yeah. You know? Yeah.
Yeah. Huge payoff.
Yeah. Moving on to our final response, here. I do not know how to pronounce this name.
Katheen, let's say.
Katheen is going to be my guess. Or Katheen. Says, I want to comment on your discussion of Walt's conviction that if he can only find the right words, he can make everyone believe him. I think it's true that Walt believes this, but I'm not sold on Walt being much of a wordsmith, certainly not compared to Jimmy / Saul. Walt is unpersuasive and a terrible liar. Skyler sees through him immediately. No one is really impressed by his rhetoric. Gus and Mike see through his bluster immediately. Saul is amused by his nerdy haplessness, later afraid of him. He controls others mostly through violence, intimidation, brinksmanship, and MacGyver supervillain devices. The only characters he really successfully manipulates with words are Hank, who is blinded by family loyalty and his impression of Walt as a total dork, and Jesse, who is the most prone to fall for it. Jesse is a drug addict, estranged from his family, craving a father figure, etc., who Walt initially met in his capacity as his high school teacher. So the one guy Walt can reliably manipulate was initially a minor under his authority and care, and is now a vulnerable, somewhat naive young adult who lives at the margins of respectable society and craves approval. It hardly takes a master manipulator to take advantage of someone under those circumstances. Outside of that, I mostly see Walt as impressed with his own talk, while other characters often look unimpressed and see right through him. Contrast with Jimmy, whose lies are generally effective on a wide range of people, who can adopt many personas, who can cry on command, etc.
Yeah, that contrast with Jimmy, I think, is important and noteworthy. When we talk about Walt having this trick where as long as he's talking, he's still winning, I think that when I bring that up, it is most important that he thinks that he has that in his favor.
Yeah. It's not entirely true that it never works on anyone else.
Yeah.
You know, it works on, like, for example, Gus in the desert when he pulls him out after he kills the dealers.
Yeah.
You know, at least temporarily, right? Like, Gus is still planning to do things, but it does give him a stay of execution.
Yes.
You know, like, you need me. You know, things like that. Or when he's his plan to kill Gale, which is like brinksmanship and a murder, you know, he still does it through talking, through convincing Mike to let him use the phone.
Yeah.
To get him, you know, like, I think it's a slightly more complicated than Katheen is making. Better Call Saul is much more about this.
Yes.
And Saul is obviously more adept at it.
Oh, they establish it in the first episode.
Yeah. It, you know, they establish it in this show. Uh-huh. You know, his first appearance, it's what Saul is. Mm-hmm. I think that Walt believes he is like 10 times better than Saul, but and has maybe half the skill, but still has some. doing this.
Yep, he has the fucking cornered wolf blunt force just violence.
Blunt force cunning.
Yeah,
you know that kind of comes through.
Yeah. Kathine also wrote another response that was a lengthy analysis of Walton Saul's characters and how they kind of act as natural foils to each other. I didn't include it because of length and also because it gets into Better Call Saul stuff that we haven't talked about yet. But I did like this paragraph, so I will read it here just to include it. Saul becomes an interesting narrative foil to Walt in that he almost serves as a barometer of Walt's moral decline. We are first introduced to Saul as this smarmy, confident, unapologetic scumbag who outsmarts and intimidates Walt. He shows up at Walt's school to say, "You amateur, I'm 10 steps ahead of you. I'll show you how to be a real criminal." But over the course of the series, the power dynamic between them completely reverses. By season 5, Walt is pinning him up against the wall and threatening his life. Saul appears increasingly panicked and in over his head as things escalate beyond what he thought he'd signed up for. He saw Walt as a naive square who he could control, only to realize that he'd thrown in with the actual supervillain. When Walt poisons Brock, we can almost measure how far Walt has fallen by Saul's reaction. Saul is like, "You've gone too far, even for me. This is not fun anymore. You're reawakening the humanity in me that I thought that I had killed, and that's really uncomfortable."
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that is true.
What's funny is Saul, I mean, it's part of a, you know, it's part of the message of Better Call Saul, or, you know, a theme of it, which is, you know, Saul could change, but he doesn't. Right.
Yes.
It was kind of just baked into him at the beginning of who he was going to be, despite that. You know, despite his efforts.
He tries many times,
but he's rebuffed.
That's the show is. He's rebuffed by circumstances and the monster that is his brother.
Yes.
But
just like, regardless, he stays fixed, because of outside forces and what his starting place was. It's a really complicated story, but him being so fixed does, again, I never thought about it until I read this, but it's like, yeah, no, by comparison, it is a milestone. He is a yardstick by which you can hold this up. It is an interesting function that he can serve.
Yeah, it's a good point.
Yeah.
It's also when he talks about realizing he'd thrown in with the actual supervillain, on this rewatch, the thing I'm realizing is how much, you know, I've beat this drum a bunch during the show, but how much the confidence of beating Gus changes Walt.
Yes.
A lot of this villainy was here, but he is so fucking on the back foot and scared for all of the season.
Oh yeah.
We don't actually get hyper confident Walt who knows he's a villain and is okay with it and has really any kind of surety until season 5.
Yeah.
You know, that's when he starts bullying Saul. That's when he kind of flips over, like him feeling like it's Mega Man rules and he now has all of Gus's powers is what really fucks him up.
Yeah.
You know, I killed, I'm Prune Tracy, is what he says. Yeah. Like,
man.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Thanks everybody for listening.
Yeah. And thanks for your responses.
Appreciate you.
Really good, thoughtful stuff.
Yeah. You can always respond to the show. Just, tell us what season it's about. We don't, put out a call for these, but also like if you have things to say about season 5 or whatever, or El Camino, you can send them in.
Yeah.
It's fine. Just you label them appropriately and stuff.
Please do.
And we are going to be back in a couple of weeks with, the first episode of season 5. I'm excited.
Me too.
That is kind of a comedy episode, which I think is a really bold move.
Very much so.
For this.
Yeah. We're looking forward to, having you join us for that. We're also looking forward to having you join us for Duckstream.
Yeah. It's going to be the weekend of December 5th, 48-hour live stream for the Transactive Gender Project out of Lewis and Clark College. Here in Portland, Oregon. Going to be a blast. Going to be really fun. We got fun stuff planned. We need this kind of thing more than ever now.
Yep.
So hopefully, you can donate. If you cannot donate, please tune in and spread the word.
Yeah. Donate. Yeah. Help trans youth. And I don't know. Just hang out. Feel less alone for a while.
Yeah. And we'll see you next week. Or see you in 2 weeks.
Two weeks. Yes. There we go.
Yeah.